I would rather have a mind opened by wonder than closed by belief. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you instant illumination. I would rather have a mind opened by wonder than closed by belief. We were discussing Forrest Gump as a movie this morning here that we had just seen last night. Now, you say, my God, Forrest Gump's been out for 100,000 years. You haven't seen it yet? That's right. I haven't seen it. I didn't miss it, but I enjoyed it when I did see it. Okay. Forrest Gump had Tom Hanks as the primary actor there. Did a good job. And as I watched it, I thought, here this fellow who is mentally not totally balanced, mentally not totally all his marbles, and the movie is about him. Well, the movie starts out with this young kid who has braces on his legs, probably from polio or something like that. And the mother was very eager to have him, you know, get along with the rest of the children, get around, walk, and what have you. And so she had these braces made for him and special shoes made for him. And he learned to walk. And he walked with sort of an awkward gait. And the boys in Alabama had a joy in picking on him and giving him a hard time, not giving him a seat on the school bus and not giving him any place in life. And he just took what came his way and was very, very laid back about it because he didn't know he was supposed to be concerned. He didn't have the mentality to tell him that he had a right to have a seat on the bus and things like that too, so he just took whatever they gave him. Well, one scene was where the boys were chasing him, and he loved to run. He had to run. And so he ran with these crutches on these braces on his legs. And the boys just chased him with a car and everything. And all of a sudden, the braces fell off his legs, and he started running like a gazelle because his legs had been strengthened by having the braces on them, giving them a chance to build up their strength. And then from that day forward, running seemed to be a great joy to him, something that was a great pleasure to him. But the essence of the movie was not so much the fellow and his limitation or his handicap, but was the blessing of the handicap. Mm-hmm. Now, the blessing of the handicap was that he didn't know that it should be different. And at one point, not to have any levels in the story, but at one point, he was told to play ping pong by an instructor, and the instructor said, "Come on, you kid, play these games. You should with everybody who was there." And he said, "Now the only thing you want to do is always keep your eye on the ball." Well, that was one thing that he had always learned to do. Whatever he did, he kept his mind totally on it. His running, he was totally on his running. He saw himself running. He saw himself running well. So then he started playing ping pong, and immediately he was success because he kept his eye on the ball. Now, nobody told him that the musculature of your body is going through several million contortions for each strike at the ball because it has to know how this is going to get there. Well, how are you going to turn your paddle and what your mind is going to be thinking and whether you want to send the ball where the guy is, or just next to him so that he can't hit the ball back, you know, or so that you can really win the game and do all these, a million, million, million things, like in tennis and golf and all these other things, you know, where you have this club that's distant from you, and you're telegraphing to the club. No, you aren't. You're telegraphing to the ball. The ball is the essence of the game, not the clubs, not the paddle, not the tennis racket, nothing like that. And so he was a natural, because he just one-pointedly did what he was supposed to do. He one-pointedly concentrated on the ball, and he saw the ball going right where he wanted it to go, and he had it perfectly down. In fact, he became quite excellent at it. We wonder about them. I would rather have a mind opened by wonder than closed by belief. I can tell you the scientific facts of how to hit a tennis ball. I can tell you a scientific facts of how to do that. And you take the club and the racket in your hand like this here, and you do this with it, and you make sure that it's turned toward the ball and things like that, and you will be a mediocre to lousy tennis player. Now, if I can, that's belief, see? It's closed by belief. Now, if I can get you into the wonder of it, now, don't think a thing about the racket. Don't think a thing about your opponent. Don't think a thing, see, don't say those things. Think only on the ball. See only the ball. See only what the ball does. And then the ball will do what you want it to do. How can it? Well, watch. And so at one of the tennis clubs that I had been writing about a number of years back, the instructor was standing there, and he's a gross fellow. That's good. And he's picking his nose, and with one hand, and with the other hand, he had the tennis racket. He'd put the tennis racket between his legs and hit the tennis ball. And he'd do this, and he'd do that, and he'd do the other thing. And he was good. He always hit it. He says, it's not what the club does, or the racket does. It's not what your position is or anything. It's that you see the ball going where you want to go. Now, have you ever heard of the Harlem Globetrotters, mm-hmm. the Harlem Globetrotters? Mm-hmm. Now, the Harlem Globetrotters are a bunch of stupid fools. They're out there dancing. They're supposed to be playing basketball, but they're dancing. And they put the ball under their legs and around here and over their shoulders, and they're going around like it's a ping pong ball, you know? And they're just having a ball. And the ball always does what they want it to do because they're concentrating on the ball. And they're thinking, I'm going to learn this new technique of doing this. Now, soccer, that's another stupid game. You look at these people playing soccer, and they take their head and they butt the ball. And then they take their feet, and they kick the ball up, and then they kick the ball up, and they kick the ball between each other with their feet, you know, just bouncing it back and forth. Well, that's not the way you're supposed to do it, you know? You're supposed to do it some other way. I don't know what, but some other way. And but they are so precise. They see the ball going right where they want it. They take it with their toe, and they roll it up their arm and down this side and over on that side, and they do just crazy things with it. And other people can't even hit a basket. Well, they not only hit the basket, they create it whirling around in the basket to make you feel a little excited. Now, is it going to go in or is it going to stay out? And you see, this is the art of the game. The reason the sports is so attractive is that everybody who plays in sports is an idiot. They are a one-pointed idiot. They only are concerned about where the ball goes, the winners. Now, the average people who are playing the game for other reasons, that's different. But the winners, the top players, the ones who are paid $2, $3, $4 million a year or per game even, you know, they are... They're one-pointed. I mean, do you know why the statement is that you can, the schools have to have good sports players, and so they let these kids in to play sports, but most of them have no education. Most of them have no great mind about them. They have no great scholastic skill about them because they're one-pointed on the game. As Forrest Gump said, he went through college, and he said it went so fast, but all he did was play golf. He just played a game, but he's one-pointed on it. Now, you, let's just take this a step further now. You are all a bunch of idiots. You say you want to be God. You say you want to live in your spiritual awareness. You say you want to be a divine being in every aspect of your life. Well, where's your concentration? Is your concentration on that you are not a divine being or that you are a divine being? Well, Ellen, if you're a divine being, divine beings don't act like you're acting, you know. Divine beings don't go around saying, hey, I hurt my toe. Hey, I've got a problem here. Hey, this isn't working out right. Hey, that... Divine beings don't say that. divine beings say, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, all is in, so one-pointed. You understand? So one-pointed. Remember Forrest Gump? So one-pointed. The Harlem Globetrotters. What's his name?
Tiger Woods,
thank you. Tiger Woods, he's a one-pointed guy too. And he plays great golf, doesn't he? Now, he has always been good at it. Why? He was always one-pointed. And you take all of these people who are good at whatever they are because they're one-pointed. Now, you tell me how a CEO can be worth $2 or $3 billion. Whiff. You tell me how a CEO can be so good that he gets bonuses and extra monies that help him, because he's one-pointed. He will not run the whole company. He will run an aspect of the company that will make it soar off the map in profits. He knows his business. And when they hire people to be CEOs, they hire them at that point in the business's life where they have a problem in a certain area. And they hire a person who is exquisite in that area, who has been proven to take other companies out of a problem in that area. And they put them to work in their company, and they pay him well. If they don't pay him well, he's not worth it, you know. If they pay him well, he will go out there and he will just one-pointedly, has nothing else on his mind. He's not supposed to go do anything except to make that company a success in the area where they are failing. Now, they have many other people on their company who are exquisite in different areas, and keep them, certainly, and use them, certainly, in their area. But, Ellen, I don't want to know what you did this morning. I don't want to know that you got up and you went to the bathroom, then you went to the Swimex, and then you went to the jacuzzi, and then you went to the chai machine, and then you went to the push machine, and then you went to the bicycle, and then you fed the dogs, and then you helped Dorothea here with whatever she was doing, and you did this and you did that. You know what I want to know about you, Ellen? I want to know that you took your morning walk, and you had an illumination. Your mind just opened up and you said, ah, yes, I know, I am divine, I am creative, I am wonderful, I am fantastic, right? All that other stuff is window dressing, which does not mean a thing. And I say to each one of you, every day of your life here at the monastery, well, what did you do today, Ingeborg? What did you do this afternoon? And Ingeborg says, well, I did the mail, and I went out to pick up the mail, and I did this here, and I wrote these. Ingeborg, what did you do here at a monastery, where we are in a monastery to work on our spiritual life, that any stupid thing that you do is of no importance except that it leads you to achieving the highest and the best in your spiritual life, right? Okay, now, I'm answering for you. Ingeborg, what did you do this morning that brought you into a deeper awareness of your own inner self? And you say, well, Herb, I was doing the mailing, and I thought, oh, here we go again. I was doing the mailing, and all of a sudden I realized, the more one-pointed I am, the more I can accomplish in joy and peace. And so, I'm not going to concentrate on doing the mailing. I'm just going to do it perfectly. I'm not going to concentrate on all my chores. I'll do it perfectly. But I'm going to say, God in me as me does this work. God in me as me does this work. God in me as me does this work. On and on and on and on and on and on and on until you believe it. Until you stop thinking that that's Ingeborg doing those things, that that's Ingeborg putting the mailing together, that's Ingeborg, I have so much work to do, you know. And not that you say that, but the thing is, God in me does it. God in me as me does it. You follow me? And then there's no problem. There's no problem. And you are in the monastery doing it. Now, what does a housewife do? She says, "Oh my God, I got to get supper ready. Family's going to be here. We're going to go out for an afternoon, I mean, an evening. My husband and I were going to go visit the relatives. We got to get the babysitter in there. We got to get that." Blah, 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 blah. See, and what does an efficient CEO do? An efficient CEO writes down the things he wants done. He says, "Mary," his secretary, "take care of these things." And then he goes about his business. And he knows that Mary's going to do it. Now, could he have done it himself, too? He could have had the phone numbers for the various things. And if he's a single dad, and he calls up and he says, "I want dinner ready at this time. I want the kids ready for bed at this time. The babysitter, I want to be there just before I leave. Da 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 da." And da! You see? And then he's not concerned. Not concerned. It took him 5 minutes to execute all those different activities because he doesn't lollygag on the phone talking about nothings, you know. And he's one-pointed. And then he goes about his activities. You see, you're here in the monastery. All of you. You're here as monks. You're here to follow your spiritual path. Not my spiritual path. I love my path and I'm following it just fine. And you try to follow my path and you won't like it. But you follow your path and you will like it. Because your path is what makes you happy. Now, do you think all is in divine order would be a good step for you? Mm-hmm. Do you think, "I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer"? Do you think that'd be a good idea? Do you think that "I am that I am"? Mm-hmm. Yes, think about that. Think about that. You are not here to be a drudge, a slave, a worker. We had one woman come to the monastery here, and she wanted to attend one of our seminars, and she didn't have any money. And so we said to her, "Well, come a couple days early and clean up the houses." "Well, I get paid for cleaning up the houses. That's my job. You know, I do these things part-time. You know, I do that." And I said, "Well, go do it." I said, "You wanted to do something for us? Now, can you type? Nope. Can you write a book? Nope. Can you proctor lessons? Nope. Can you do the gardening? Nope. Can you do this or that? Nope." We had one lady here. Lovely lady. Lovely lady. And she's a black lady. And Stefan gave her the job of going out working in the garden down here, the Paradise Garden. And it was really nice and green at that time of the year. And so she went out there and she was working. And after about 5 minutes, she came to a tree and sat under the tree in the shade. And Stefan came out and found her there and said, "What are you doing?" She says, "I don't work in the sun. I do not work in the sun." And Stefan said, "All right, what do you do?" And so Stefan gave her other activities. But you see, she would have been so wise to just say, "Stefan, I don't work in the sun." And right away. And then nobody would have been upset. Because nobody here is required to do anything. Everyone here is given opportunities to do different jobs. And if they don't do it, that's too bad. They'll be given another job, perhaps, and then another job. Pretty soon they're out of jobs, and they're just sitting around here doing nothing. And pretty soon they say, "I don't like being there. I don't feel like I'm being needed or anything." And they're not. They're not following the process. But it's not what you do. It's how you do it. Brother Lawrence, when he was working in his monastery, the guys would come in from the grapeyards, you know, and their feet would be all muddy and they got all mud all over his floor. And he'd have the kitchen floor in the monastery clean as a whistle. And they'd come in there, dirty, dirty, dirty. And so then he'd go down, crawling under the table and wiping off their feet and, you know, wiping off the mud so they wouldn't track it over his floor. But he didn't do it to be naughty to them. He did it just because that was his duty and he loved it. And he said, "I am doing it for Jesus." Now, that's one way for doing it, you know. And whatever our motivation is, whatever our drive is, I would rather have you do it for yourself. Do it because you are divine. Do it because you are God. And remember, I would rather have a mind opened by wonder than closed by belief. When we are opened by the wonder of one-pointedness, as we have up here, untouchable, one-pointed, unpossessed, non-judgmental, what does that lead to? Dorothea, what does that lead to? Dorothea? 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 Look at me, I'll give you leads. Look at me, and I'll give you. What does it lead to in the middle above the map there? Dorothea?
Unpossessed?
Dorothea! Look at me. There is a map on the wall. See it? See it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, that little thing. Now, what's right up above it?
Oh, love.
Oh, yeah.
Unconditional
love. That's right. Untouchability, one-pointedness, unpossessed, non-judgmental, leads us to unconditional love. If we are untouchable, if we are one-pointed, if we are not possessed, and if we do not judge, we are the most unconditionally loving beings you could ever imagine in the world. And isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I tell you, fantastic. Okay, you got 21 minutes now. So let's call it an instant illumination and realize I would rather have a mind opened by wonder than closed by belief. Have a lovely day and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.